Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thank you for sharing part of your day with me. Coming up later in the show, we'll continue our series digging into a big, fat, detailed biography. We call the series Full Bio. We're continuing our discussion of The Dead Are Arising, The Life of Malcolm X. And then in honor of early voting in New York City, which starts this Saturday, we'll get a history lesson with Alicia Chang, author of a book called This Is What Democracy Looked Like, A Visual History of the Printed Ballot. She's also the curator of an exhibit of the same name, which is at Cooper Union on view through November 7th. That is all on the way, so let's get this started with some music. Let Love Rule is the name of a new memoir from Lenny Kravitz. It also happens to be the name of his 1989 debut album that he always dreamed about making. In his new book, we follow the story of Leonard Albert Kravitz, specifically the 25 years that led up to the release of that first album. We come to understand how a biracial kid who was both spiritual and ambitious learned to exist in multiple worlds at the same time. The worlds of his black and white families, of Judaism and Christianity, and of Manhattan, where he was called Lenny, and in Brooklyn, where his friends called him Eddie. New York City is integral to his life, and our city gets a lot of love in this book. Even our sister station, WQXR, gets a shout out. His grandfather loved to listen. When his beloved mother, Roxy Roker, got a starring role in The Jeffersons, the family moved to L.A., but friction with his father, a TV news producer, Cy Kravitz, ultimately led a teenage Lenny to leave home and live between cars and friends' places. All the while, Lenny was pursuing his musical calling while doing the necessary work of making connections with everybody from fellow aspiring musicians to the founder of Motown Records. Let Love Rule details Kravitz's journey to embracing his passions for both God and rock music and culminates in the album that first put him on a path to a rock-solid career. Lenny Kravitz, welcome to All of It.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. So in the book, you know, your sun sign is Gemini, and you describe yourself as a Gemini soul. You have this Russian Jewish father, Afro-Caribbean Christian mother, grew up on the Upper East Side, and then with your parents out and grandparents out in Bed-Stuy. What did you learn about human nature by walking in all these worlds?
Well, through my experience, I don't want to say I learned. I didn't realize that there was any issue regarding the differences in human beings, in race, in religion, in background, in traditions. Growing up between the two families on both sides, I just thought that was life. People looked different. And beside the family, because my parents were, you know, in the artist scene in New York City at that time in the late 60s and the early 70s, you know, everybody was in our house, artists from every background. And so by the time, you know, I was 6 years old, I had seen everybody. I had seen so many people, and I thought that was life, and there was no issue about it, and it was wonderful. Everybody's different. Life is colorful. Everybody has different traditions and things that they do and ways they live their life, and we respect that. And then I went to first grade, and my parents walked me to school on the first day, as they do. And it seemed that my parents were the only ones that morning that did not match. And so a kid ran up to us, stopped, pointed his finger, and yelled, your mother's black and your father's white. And it was very loud, and it was, I didn't understand what the finger pointing was and what the issue was. And that's when the discussions about race, you know, started to happen between my mother and I.
You ask in the book this interesting question, who was happier, Manhattan Lenny or Brooklyn Eddie? And you get this name because of the Southern drawl of a girl who, the way she keeps saying your name. But as an adult now, What do you think the impact of that sort of duality was on how you saw yourself and how you developed your own sense of self?
It gave me different worlds to maneuver in. It was very interesting to be able to have this contrast between the Upper East Side, you know, growing up on 82nd between 5th and Madison, with the Metropolitan Museum of Art as your backyard and Central Park, and then going to Bed-Stuy on Troop and Kosciuszko, which was quite different than it is now, drastically different than it is now. I had different friends. I had different houses that I lived in, a different name, different activities, different culture. And that fed my Gemini spirit, because I liked that. I liked the contrasts, and I liked that I didn't have to be the same all the time. And I really liked that.
This book is so fun. This book could be, you could have a New York City Lenny Kravitz walking tour with this book.
Oh, yeah.
And you're very detailed. It's interesting. You're really detailed about the places. Why was that important to you? I mean, you could have just said, I was with my grandparents in Bed-Stuy, but you're very specific about the locations.
Well, you know, that's the color. That's the mood. That's the expression. And so, you know, I remember all of these things with great detail. Now, don't ask me what I did yesterday or where I put the keys or the thing, you know. I have no idea. But if you ask me something that took place when I was a kid, I remember it down to friends' addresses and phone numbers from first grade. It's very strange. I obviously enjoyed my childhood, and I retained all of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My guest is Lenny Kravitz. The name of his new memoir is Let Love Rule. So one of the great stories you tell about sort of describing, like, kind of gives us a peek into your relationship with music, is you're a little kid, you're in the grocery store, and you start sort of humming and singing Tchaikovsky.
Yes.
And you don't know what you're singing. You just like the tune. You're just down with it.
Yes.
And then you would later on in California join the California Boys Choir, very prestigious, singing in Italian and in Latin. So I'm curious how your interest and experience with classical music, when did that marry in with your love of rock? Or how did it help you love rock?
Yeah, well, as you say, the first song, one of the first songs that I ever sang was a melody from a Tchaikovsky symphony, which was on my little toy when I was a kid, you know, as the background music. And you know, my grandfather used to listen to classical music in the car. He loved classical music. That was his thing. I didn't quite understand it then, but I had to listen to it, and I started to like it and hear it and feel it. And then when I got to Los Angeles, when my mother got the Jeffersons, and you know, she wanted to find an activity for me since she was going to be so busy and didn't want me to be, you know, roaming the streets as I ended up doing. So she had a friend whose son was in this California Boys Choir, and we went to go see a performance, and I liked it. I liked the music. I met some of the kids. I liked them, and I thought it would be interesting. And so I auditioned, I got in, I was trained, and then I graduated into the concert choir and began working with, you know, the likes of conductors like Eric Leinsdorf, and, you know, recording with Zubin Mehta and singing with the Metropolitan Opera, the Joffrey Ballet. And what it taught me, which relates to rock music or any music that I make, is harmony and theory. Mm-hmm. Being around all of this music, and all of these orchestras and conductors and singing all of these really, challenging pieces of music really opened up my ear and taught me everything about harmony and theory just, you know, by taking part in it. And of course we studied, we had to learn to sight read and sing in, you know, 15 different languages, but by being there and by soaking it in, that was one of the greatest educations that I've ever had. And I would not be here today without that, the music and also the discipline that went with it.
My guest is Lenny Kravitz. The name of his new memoir is Let Love Rule. And you read the audiobook. I was driving to Woodstock listening to your audiobook. Like, what could be more perfect? It just felt like the right vibe. But not all people who, in their memoirs, not everybody reads their memoirs. One, why did you want to read it? And what did you learn about your story hearing it aloud that you hadn't really picked up in all the writing and editing?
Well, first of all, they asked me, you know, the publishing company, you know, would I read it? We're going to do an audiobook. Mm-hmm. And I just figured, why should somebody else read my story? I've never done this before. I've never written a book. I've never done an audiobook. And it, you know, that part was challenging because, you know, you have to enunciate and you have to be clear, but yet you don't want to be stiff and you want to do it very naturally. So, you know, it took a minute to get into the rhythm. But I'm glad that I did it. And to your observation, I did somehow feel my story more by hearing it audibly. And what I got from it was just how beautiful and personal my story was. When I was asked to write this book, I thought, you know, I don't have a story. Is my life interesting enough? You know, and you know, I look, you know, I think we all tend to look at our lives sometimes as being our lives, and we see other people's lives as being more colorful or more exciting. But I had an extraordinary upbringing, full of all kinds of dynamics, and the thing that I actually received from the book that I did not expect was a great deal of healing in regards to my life, especially when it comes to the relationship with my father. That was very challenging. I got to see him as a character and back up and view him like that, not just as my father. And I realized that he was just a man doing the best he could with what he had based on his upbringing and his, experiences that molded him. And, he had a lot of very difficult experiences and issues with his own father. So through writing this book, any judgment that I would have had remaining or feelings, they dissolved, and I began to actually love my father in a way that I wasn't able to when he was alive. But yet, that didn't matter that he wasn't here, because, you know, as my grandfather always told me growing up, you cannot kill energy, and the spirit and the energy remained. So therefore, I was still able to deal with my father, just not in the flesh, but by energy and by spirit. So it was a beautiful experience, and I'm really glad that I wrote the book, you know, solely for that reason, you know?
Yeah, it's such an interesting, the relationship between your mom and your dad, and then you and your mom, and then you and your dad, and then the three of you. I mean, it's both simple and complicated at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and your parents just seem like very different people. They obviously had some shared values, like discipline, and they were both charming and talented, and they had good friends. They surrounded you with good and interesting friends. When you think about it, what do you think attracted them to each other?
I think my father was drawn to my mother because of her talent. And because of her love for the arts, he had that. I mean, he was a journalist. You know, he was an ex-military man, you know, he was really into jazz and theater. And I think that, you know, they bonded on that. I think that's what their first, you know, their first dates were going to see, you know, all of these great artists, going to see jazz concerts, going to see plays, et cetera. You know, and my mother, you know, was beautiful and talented and educated and charming, you know.
And in the book, you have a series of aunties.
Yes.
That are pretty spectacular. When
yes.
Cicely Tyson is one of your aunties. That's
yes.
That's all right.
Yes.
So, you know, I think a lot of people now who are meeting and learning about ladies like Kamala Harris don't really understand. I'm sorry, my dog's having a fit. Understand the power of the auntie?
Yes.
Can you explain that power? And what was something you learned from your group of aunties that stills with you today?
I mean, the great thing about growing up in that time, you know, especially, you know, in the Black community, mm-hmm. you know, we have lots of quote unquote cousins and aunties and uncles and extended family becomes true family. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't matter if there's blood or not. And so I had these beautiful, strong, amazing Black women, in my life, from my godmother, Cicely Tyson, to Diane Carroll, to my mother's two friends from childhood, my godmother Joan Hamilton Brooks and my godmother Joy Homer. And these women were always around, and you know, they were the rocks, they were the foundations of our family and their families, and held everything together. And seeing that strength was monumental for me. And I always felt seen by them. I always felt seen, listened to, loved, and understood. And so I was very blessed. And still I'm blessed. Godmother Cicely called me yesterday. She always checks in with me. And it's a relationship that I hold very close to my heart.
My guest is Lenny Kravitz. The name of his new memoir is Let Love Rule. One of the great things about listening to it as an audiobook is that you sing in the book
a couple of times, because there were, you know, there were instances where there was a song, like the song that my mother taught me, so that if I got lost, I'd be able to go up to a police officer and sing this song, and they'd be able to, you know, take me home. I just thought, I don't want to just speak those words. You know, same thing with the gospel piece and a couple of the other songs, you know, that I'd written from Let Love Rule. So yeah, I thought it would be interesting to just sing them, you know.
Well, let's listen to a little bit. You write about the revelatory moment when your dad took you to a Jackson 5 concert. So let's take a little listen to something from Let Love Rule, the audiobook.
All of a sudden, the lights dimmed again. Blinding spotlights exploded to life. I could make out a bunch of guys running onto the stage and taking their positions. And then it happened. Boom, boom, ba boom, ba da boom, 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 boom.
That's so
All
great.
Of a sudden, I realized I was looking directly at the Jackson 5.
That is so great. What is, you know, it's interesting because you can study music and you can listen to music, but when you see it live, it does something to you. It changes your relationship to it. What was that moment like for you?
I mean, you know, this is, you know, 1971. I mean, you know, you only heard the artists that you loved on record. Maybe you caught them on a TV show once in a while and saw their face in a magazine. That was it. And so I was, you know, into this music by the Jackson 5 that I discovered as a kid, and I had their singles, and I thought the music was incredible. Of course, I'd seen their pictures, I'd seen them on, you know, TV specials, and you know, I never thought I'd see them in person. And my father takes me to this concert as a surprise. I didn't know, you know, who we were going to see. I knew we were at the Garden, but I didn't know who was coming on. He didn't tell me. And they came on the stage, and it was the most magical moment that I'd experienced up to that point. The music just exploded, and it wasn't just the music. The music alone was genius. You know, the songwriting, the production, these are the best musicians, producers, arrangers in Detroit, you know, and you have Michael Jackson with this God-given voice that no one's ever heard before or since, and his brothers, an amazing stage show, choreography, fashion. I mean, the whole thing just jumped out at me and grabbed me. And from that moment on, I knew that I had to have a relationship with music somehow. I didn't know how or what, but I began to just dream of that. And, you know, I'd emulate them at home. You know, I'd put on these rubber galoshes, these black rubber galoshes that went up to my knees because they were wearing these funky, you know, knee-high boots in the show. And I would grab a pencil as, you know, as a microphone, and I would, you know, pretend to be them. And you know, that was it. And of course, listening to all kinds of other music by artists like Stevie Wonder and Gladys Knight and the Pips and Curtis Mayfield and Al Green and so forth. You know, Aretha Franklin. I mean, R&B and soul was my thing at that time. Yeah.
Throughout the course of the book, as you're starting to pursue your career, you're dealing with your family issues, you're out on your own at one point, sort of couch surfing, living in a car, and you have opportunities along the way to sign a deal or to go one way or to change your image a little bit, and you really hold out for quite a bit of time. You walk away from a couple of different really big opportunities.
Yes.
Why did you know to do that? What was the little voice inside?
I don't know. It was all about that voice and spirit, because if you ask me how I had the strength as a teenager while I was living on floors and cars and walking the streets, how I could turn down these deals when they were offering me, you know, fame and money and, you know, the ability to do what I wanted to do, which was music, it still baffles me. But, and especially because I hadn't found my voice yet. I hadn't found my true expression. But I knew what they wanted me to do was not who I wanted to be. But I needed, you know, I needed the bread, right? And I needed the break. So I would take the meetings and we would talk and talk. And, you know, as they'd keep talking to me about what they wanted me to do, I kept feeling worse and worse. And when it came time to sign the deal, all I can say is that I felt physically ill. I couldn't do it. My body wouldn't allow me to do it. And it's very strange, but you know, we all have our road to walk down. We all have our destiny. Some of us make it, some of us don't. And because we either listen or we don't listen, and whatever our purpose is. And I'm just very, you know, glad that I was able to hear that voice and to feel that feeling. Because, you know, just because there are open doors in front of you doesn't mean that you're meant to walk through them. You can also just look and see that that is not your path and wait for your door. But, you know, as human beings, we can be impatient. Or we don't know that we're going to get another shot, and so we're going to take a chance and walk down that door. But I just didn't have the ability to do so. And I saw, you know, a few years later why. And I see that still to this day. Because had I have gone through one of those doors, I am sure that I would not be sitting here speaking with you right now.
The name of the memoir is Let Love Rule. It's from Lenny Kravitz. Lenny, thanks for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
This is all of it.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.